So we are up to Kuf Mem Hey Amud Aleph. We're by the two dots. It's like closer toward the bottom of the Amud. So the Gemara goes back to something that we were talking a little bit about yesterday. Oh, can everyone just mute themselves, please, if they're not already muted? So the Gemara says Gufa Kvashim Shasachtan Amar Rav Lagufan Mutter Lememehan Pater Avalaser Ushlakos Bein Lagufan Bein Lememehan Mutter. According to Rav, and again, this is the opinion that we quoted yesterday, Rav holds that any time that I want to squeeze out a pickled vegetable. So if my intention is to make it a little bit less soggy or briny, that's mutter lechatchila. But if my intention is to actually use that liquid, use that brine for my own purposes, that would be an Isser D'Rabbanan. Whereas when it comes to cooked vegetables, so Rav says that's going to be mutter to squeeze them out, whether you're doing it to make it less juicy or whether you're doing it because you want the juices. That's all according to Rav. Ushmuel Amar.
Where are we?
We started from the two dots. It's the 35th line. It's like close to the bottom, close to the wide lines of the bottom, like about 10, 15 lines before the wide lines of the bottom of the Amud. Okay,
page
so
145.
Kuf mem, yeah, Kuf mem hey Amud Aleph. Okay, so that's all according to Rav. Ushmuel Amar echad ze v'echad ze legufan mutter lememehen pater avalaser. So Shmuel, again, which we also quoted yesterday, Shmuel basically thinks that there's no distinction between pickled vegetables versus cooked vegetables, but rather the distinction lies in what your intention is. Meaning, if your goal is to make the vegetable less liquidy, briny, juicy, that's mutter lechadchila to squeeze it on Shabbos, but if your intention is to use the juices for yourself, that would be an Isser D'Rabbanan. And now we have a third sheet to which we actually did not quote yesterday. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Echad Kivashim Be'echad Shlakos, Legufan Mutter, Limimeyan Chayev Chata. So Rabbi Yochanan has an even more extreme formulation. So again, Rabbi Yochanan thinks, like Shmuel, that there's no distinction between cooked vegetables and pickled vegetables, unlike Rav, but he thinks that there's actually a more extreme disparity between the reasons why you're squeezing it out. Namely, if you squeeze the vegetable out because you want it to be less briny, less liquidy, that's Mutter Lechadchila. So in that point, he agrees with Shmuel. Whereas if you're squeezing them out because you want the juices, Rabbi Yochanan thinks that's an Isser D'Oraisa, which we've never seen yet, because both according to Rav and Shmuel, this would only be at worst an Isser D'Rabbanan, but Rabbi Yochanan believes that this would actually be a violation of Schita Mi D'Oraisa. So the Gemara now questions all three of these Shitos. The Gemara says, Mesve, Sochtin Kivashim B'Shabes L'Tzorech HaShabes, Avalole Motzai Shabes, V'Zeisim V'Anovim Lo Yischot, V'Yim Socher Chayiv Chatas, Kashil Rav, Kashil Shmuel, Kashil Reb Yochanan. This brisa that we just quoted is against all three opinions. Why? Because the brisa says explicitly that a person is permitted to squeeze out the kvashim, which are the pickled vegetables, on Shabbos, for Shabbos, but again, you can't squeeze it out for use after Shabbos. So why is this problematic according to everyone? Because there is no shita in the Gemara that we quoted that holds that you're allowed to squeeze the vegetables out to use the juices. Either it's an Isser D'Rabbanan, or maybe it's an Isser D'Oraisa, depending on which opinion you hold. But this brisa makes it sound like that as long as I'm planning to use the liquid on Shabbos itself, then it's mutter lechadchila. So that's against every shita that we just quoted. So how do all three of these opinions resolve this brisa? So the Gemara explains.
Yeah. That you squeeze them into a bowl even?
That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like. Yeah, this brisa makes it seem like you can squeeze it into a cup and drink it straight if you wanted to, which is against every single shita that we just quoted, right? So that's exactly the Gemara's question. So how do all of these Amoraim resolve this brisa? So the Gemara explains, Rav Misaris Latameh, Shmuel Misaris Latameh, Rabbi Yochanan Misaris Latameh. Each of the Amoraim will give their own way of reinterpreting the brisa. So for example, Rav Misaris Latameh, Sochdin Kivashim B'Shabes L'Tzorech HaShabes, Avalola Motzai Shabes, So basically, Rav just reads his opinion into this brisa. In other words, what Rav basically says is that, yeah, the only time you're allowed to do this, to squeeze the vegetables on Shabbos, is if your intention is to make the vegetables less briny, less liquidy, which again, everyone agrees is going to be mutter in certain cases at least, whereas if your intention is to actually squeeze out the liquid to drink, so then Rav will agree that it's going to be a problem. So he just reinterprets the case of the brisa. Then Shmuel Misaretz Atameh, Shmuel also has to reinterpret the brisa, namely, Sochtin Kivashim B'Shabes L'Tzorech HaShabes Hu Hadin L'Shlakos Bamed Dvar Mamurim L'Gufa Navalim Emeyan Pater Aval Aser V'Zeisim Ba'anovim Lo Yischot V'Yim Sochet Chayiv Chatas. So a similar story for Shmuel. Shmuel also reads his interpretation into the brisa, where he says that when it comes to cooked or pickled vegetables, I'm allowed to squeeze them out L'Chadchila if I'm doing it it to make it less liquidy, but if my intention is to actually drink the liquid, that would be an Isser Derabanan, whereas when it comes to squeezing things like grapes and olives, which we already spoke about yesterday, that would be an Isser D'Oraisa, because as we've already mentioned a few times in this parak, those were the only types of fruits that were considered normal to squeeze back then, so that would be considered an Isser D'Oraisa. And then finally, Rabbi Yochanan Mesaritz Latame, Sochten Kivashim L'Tzorech HaShabbos Avalolim Motzei Shabbos Echad Kivashim Yechad Shlakos Bamed Dvar Mamurim L'Gufa Avalim Mehen Lo Yischot V'Yim Sochad Nasa Kamisha Sochad Zizim Ma'anovim V'Chayiv Chatas. Again, this is Rabbi Yochanan's way to reinterpret the Braisa, where he claims that squeezing any vegetable on Shabbos to, you know, in other words, to drink the liquids is actually an Isser D'Oraisa, because Rabbi Yochanan equates that with squeezing grapes and olives. Okay, so the Gemara now points out, the Gemara now cites a dissenting opinion here. Amar Rav Chiya Barashi Amarav Dvar Torah Eino Chayiv Ela Al Drisas Zesim Va'anovim Bilvav. Comes the Gemara citing two different Amoraim, and the Gemara says that basically everything we've set up until now is really incorrect, or at the very least is not as significant as we thought. In other words, the whole discussion we've been having the last few days in this Gemara is in terms of the question about squeezing out vegetables, you know, for the juices versus to make it less liquidy. Comes the Gemara now and says that this whole discussion that we've been having about squeezing out vegetables is at worst only an Isser D'Rabbanan. Because when we talk about the primary Isser D'Oraisa of not squeezing or pressing or things like that, we're specifically talking about the process of trampling upon grapes and olives, which again, in the times of the Gemara, the way they used to process and make olive oil and wine, they would have some guys, you know, like, you know, take their bare feet and stamp on top of the grapes and the olives. That was considered a normal method of squeezing and producing wine and olive oil. So according to these two opinions in the Gemara, these two Amoraim, anything short of actually, you know, stepping and trampling upon the grapes and olives is not going to be an Isser D'Oraisa, because it's considered to be an abnormal way of squeezing out the fruits on Shabbos. Okay, so that's one statement. Now the Gemara quotes a completely unrelated halacha that has nothing at all to do with Hilchos Shabbos, but it's just mentioned because it was mentioned by the same Amora. The Gemara says, "V'ein aid mipi'aid kosher elo le'edus isha bilvad." Comes the Gemara and says that the notion, the concept of what's called aid mipi'aid is another way of saying hearsay. In other words, we know that normally, if a person wants to testify in court about anything, they need to actually have witnessed the event, whether it's a murder, whether it's Reuven breaking Shimon's window, whatever the case is. Most of the time, we insist that the witnesses actually witness the event that they're claiming they saw. Now, the Gemara says, what about a person who didn't actually witness anything, but he has first-hand knowledge that some other guy witnessed it? So the Gemara says, normally, we would just throw that guy out of Bezdin, because you can't rely on hearsay, we can't rely on second-hand testimony. But the Gemara says there's one exception to that rule, which is Eidus Isha Bilvai. What's Eidus Isha? So the way that Rashi explains what the Gemara is talking about, at least in the Hava, I mean, we'll see in a second that the Gemara is actually going to reject this, but at least in this stage of the Gemara, Eidus Isha means a testimony regarding the marital status of a woman. So these are sugyas that appear at the end of Maseches Yevamos. Let's say, for example, a witness comes to court and says, Reuven was married to Rachel, and I saw Reuven drown, I saw Reuven get killed, whatever. So based on his testimony, we can allow Rachel to get remarried. So the Gemara has this chiddush that the witness did not, this guy who's claiming that Reuven died, in other words, does not actually need to see Reuven die. If he has firsthand knowledge from somebody else that Reuven died, that would be sufficient. Now again, without getting into too much detail about this, because this is really a different topic about why this should even work in the first place, but the Gemara essentially says that, first of all, we're makel because of concerns regarding aguna, so we know that Chazal typically are very, very lenient when it comes to in the realm of aguna, so we try to find kulas. Also, the Gemara says that oftentimes, that the reason why, for example, we would allow, let's say one witness walked into Beis Din and said that, I saw Reuven die, and I want to let Rachel get remarried, based on that, the Gemara says the reason why we would believe him is because Rachel is unlikely to get remarried on her own until she does her own investigation. Because if it turns out that that witness was lying and that Reuven is alive and she gets remarried, that means that she's violating the Isser of Lo Sinaf. She's committing adultery. And if she has any children, those children are going to be Mamzerim. So the stakes are very, very high. So if Rachel is willing to go on out on a limb and get remarried, the Gemara in Yevamo says that Isha Daika Umintzva, that a woman probably does her own investigation and she's not just taking the word word of this one witness. So we say, because the stakes are so high, we're going to trust you to do your own investigative work and to actually figure out the details of this case. Now again, the Gemara in a second is about to reject this point that we just made, but that's the theory behind this idea, that we can even rely on hearsay, we can even rely on a secondhand testimony, you know, in terms of allowing a woman to get remarried, at least again in the Hava Amina of the Gemara. So the Gemara now wants to know a further question. What about when it comes to testimony regarding the status of a bechor? Now, again, here we're talking about an animal. What's the case here exactly? So here we're talking about, let's say, an animal, which is a bechor, which is in the possession of a kohen. Now, typically, it's in the if a kohen himself owns a bechor, so the Gemara says in Maseches Bechoros, the kohanim were suspect in inflicting mumin, inflicting blemishes in the bechor, because it was in their best interest to actually have a bechor that was a bal mum and not a tam. Why? Because if the bechor was a bal mum, so then they could just use it for whatever they wanted. If the bechor was a tam, then they would have to offer it as a karban, and then, you know, maybe they wouldn't get all the meat, and they wouldn't, you know, be entitled to every single part of the animal. So it was in their best interest, especially if they owned the animal, that the Bechor actually be considered a Baal Mum. So the Gemara says, Gemara wants to know, what would the halacha be about the same kind of edus, this hearsay? So Reuven comes into Bez and it says, you know, I heard from Shimon that Levi's animal is a Bechor, but it has a Mum. So the question is, would that be valid testimony? So it's a machlokas in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Rav Ami Asir, Rav Asi Shar, is a machlokas between Rav Ami and Rav Asi, whether we can accept this type of testimony of hearsay regarding the status of a Bechor. So Amar Le Rav Ami Le Rav Asi, Vahatana Devim Enashia, in Ein Mi Pied Kasher, Elola Edus Isha Bilvad. So Rav Ami turns to Rav Asi. Again, Rav Ami was the one who says that we cannot rely on hearsay when it comes to the status of a Bechor. He turns to Rav Asi and says, how can you allow this type of testimony? Didn't the Gemara just say that the only scenario in which we accept this type of testimony is this one unique case regarding allowing a woman to get remarried? So the Gemara says, no, we misunderstood the application of this Gemara. The Gemara says, Ema Le'edus Sheha Isha Kshera La Bilvad. The Gemara says that when we said in the beginning of this Amud that, you know, that hearsay is an acceptable form of testimony, we didn't mean that it's only acceptable in a case of allowing a woman to get remarried, but rather what the Gemara meant was is that hearsay is acceptable for any type of testimony in which a woman is allowed to give edus. Now, normally we know most scenarios women are not allowed to give edus. That's a gzeres hakasov. The pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, va'amdu shneha anashim below nashim. The Gemara in Masechta Shavuos and a few other places has a drasha that women typically are not kosher to give edus, but there are a few exceptions to that rule. So any scenario where women are allowed to give testimony, we also accept this lower form of testimony that's known as aid and epaid, which is, again, is basically just a form of hearsay. So in other words, what the Gemara is basically saying is that any time that the standards of testimony are lowered, we can accept this, you know, lower form, this more diluted form of testimony known as aid and epaid. Okay. So the Gemara now says, Rav Yemar Achshar Eid Mipiyeh Levachor, Karayal Emar Yemar, Yemar Shari Bukhra. Vehilchasa Eid Mipiyeh Kasher Levachor. The Gemara says that Rav Yemar, based on what we just said, actually would permit, would allow a hearsay when it came to the status of a bechor. And Maremar, when he heard this, used to make fun of Rav Yemar. He used to call him Yemar Shari Bukhra. Yemar, the guy who permits animals that are bechorim. So the Gemara says, but the truth is that Rav Yemar was actually right, because that's what the Gemara ultimately said. Because remember, the Gemara said at the Maskana that in reality, we can accept hearsay for any type of testimony in which a woman would have been accepted, not just the case of, you know, of allowing a woman to get remarried like we thought in the Hava Amina, but rather, the Maskana was correct, namely, that any type of testimony for which a woman is allowed to testify, that is considered to be a valid form of edus. In that case, we can accept hearsay as a valid form of testimony. Okay.
Are we saying here that a woman is allowed to testify regarding a womb of a bechor?
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
That's what it sounds, pretty radical.
Yeah, I'm again. It's not, the status of a bechor, I think, you know, in comparison to other realms of edus, I think is probably a little bit less significant than, you know, a murder case, for example, or, on the scale of severity, the Gemara assumes that a woman is allowed to testify regarding the validity of a bechor, whether it's considered a bal mum or not. Yeah. Okay. So then we saw in the Mishnah, Chalos Devash. The Mishnah spoke about, the Mishnah presented a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim regarding a honeycomb from a beehive that was oozing out honey on Shabbos, whether that honey is permissible. So the Gemara says, Ki asa Rav Hoshi Amin Harda, asa v'aisei masnisa biyade, zesim v'anavim sheriskan me'erev Shabbos v'yatsu me'atzim an asurin, v'Rabbi Eliezer v'Rav Shimon Matirin. So Rav Hoshi quoted this brisa that presented a very similar machlokes to what we saw in the Mishnah regarding, let's say I had grapes or olives and I crushed them up, I pressed the grapes or olives before Shabbos, and now as Shabbos is beginning, the grapes and olives are continuing to ooze out all of their liquid. So the question is, am I allowed to use that liquid on Shabbos? So that's a machlokas. According to the Chachamim, that it's usher to use that, but according to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon, it's going to be mutter. So Amar Rav Yosef Gavri Yaseira Asalash Minan. So Rav Yosef asks, what exactly is Rav Hoshia coming to add in this Gemara that we didn't already know? Is he just coming to teach us another person? Meaning, the only thing that seems to be added in this case is the addition of the fact that, oh, this opinion that allows the juices that are oozing out of the grape or the olive after Shabbos begins seems to also conform with Rabbi Shimon's position. Meaning, this opinion was already recorded in the Mishnah as following Rabbi Eliezer. So if the only thing that the Gemara is now adding is that, oh, by the way, Rabbi Shimon also says this, that doesn't seem to be a very justifiable reason to repeat the exact same halacha that we already saw in the Mishnah just to teach us, oh, by the way, Rabbi Shimon says the same thing. Like that, you know, you would think that there'd be something else that we would be learning from this. So the Gemara says, you're right, there is actually something else. The Gemara says, Amar le'abai, you know, tuva kamashmon, there are really a lot of significant points that we learn from this, namely, the imni masnisen, hava amina hasim hu deme ikara uchla ula vesof uchla, aval hacha deme ikara uchla ula vesof mashke, emalo kamashmalan. The Gemara says that I might have had a hava amina, that the case of our Mishnah regarding the honeycomb and the case of the brisa regarding the liquid that oozes out of the grape or the olive are actually radically different. Why? Because the assumption is that the honeycomb is considered to be a solid, is considered to be a food the whole way through, even when the honey is oozing out. The Gemara is assuming, again, for whatever reason, the Gemara is assuming that honey has the status of a solid for these purposes, whereas the juices that ooze out of the grape and the olive are obviously a liquid. So one might have argued that maybe we should distinguish between those two cases. The Gemara says, no, it's not true. The Gemara says that the standards are going to be the same in both cases, and therefore both Rabbi Eliezer and Reb Shimon will agree, both by the honeycomb as well as in the case of the grapes and the olive, that anything that oozes out from them on Shabbos is going to be permissible. Again, the Chachamim obviously are going to disagree in both cases anyway. Okay, so the Mishnah now says the following: Kol Shabbat b'chamin me'erev Shabbos, shorin oso b'chamin b'Shabbos. V'chol shaloba b'chamin me'erev Shabbos, medichin oso b'chamin b'Shabbos. Chutz min hamaliach hayashan, v'kul yasa yispanin, shahadachasan zohi gemar malachta. The Mishnah presents a very famous and very important halacha, where the Mishnah says the following, that if I have a food that was already cooked in hot water, in other words, it was already cooked from before Shabbos, so the Mishnah says explicitly that you are allowed to put that back into hot water to quote-unquote cook it again on Shabbos. This is the famous principle known as ein bishel achar bishel. Right, that once something is already cooked once before Shabbos, there is no isser whatsoever to cook the food again. Whereas if something was not cooked but when Shabbos began, so the Mishnah says you are not allowed to soak it in hot water, but what you can do is that you can rinse it with hot water. The assumption is that rinsing it is not going to cook it nearly as much as actually letting it sit in hot water. The only exception even to that rule, however, are things that we call maliach hayashan and kul yasa yispan. These are, you know, types of very small, salty types of fish that cook very, very quickly. This is what we, you know, colloquially refer to as kale habishal, things that are easily cooked. So we assume, la halacha, that things that are kale habishal, that are easily cooked, are problematic to even soak in water. This is a whole part of a whole different sugya earlier in Masechet Shabbos regarding chumras that we have regarding a kli sheni. Because even though the Gemara says in a few places in this Masechet and other Masechetas that kli sheni eino mevashel, that typically something in a kli sheni won't, you know, la halacha doesn't cook. Again, there's a whole discussion why that should be so, but at the end of the day, a kli sheni doesn't cook. The Gemara says that the exception to that rule are things that are kale habishal, things that are quote-unquote easily cooked, like these small fish or things of that nature. We assume you are not allowed to cook even in a kli sheni. Now, this led to a whole separate machlokas, a whole big issue in the Rishonim regarding what to do la halacha today. Because the problem is today is that most of us don't really know what does and doesn't qualify technically as kale habishal. So that's why the Yireim, one of the Rishonim, had a very, very big chumrah, where he basically said that we have to assume that everything in the world is kali Kalya Bishol, and we have to just be machmir to never use a kli sheni. That's the reason why we typically, if you're making tea on Shabbos, you're going to use a kli shlishi. If you make coffee, you're going to typically use a kli shlishi, which again, even that, not all poskim think is even going to help you anyway, but you know, the standard psak, at least according to Rav Moshe, is that using a kli shlishi will help you. But the truth is that this also, just parenthetically, is also a very significant issue for those of us who like to dip our challah in soup. So according to those people who think that you know, that a kli sheni can cook, that potentially could be a very serious problem. Potentially, again, it touches on a whole slew of different issues about whether you think ein bishul achar bishul extends to the question of baking, because bread is baked, it's not cooked, so that's one machlokes. Then there's a further issue in terms of the status of a ladle, whether a ladle is considered a kli shlishi or not. So again, these are all like a whole slew of tangential issues, but a lot of these things do emanate based on this Mishnah. Okay, so the Gemara now says the following. Kagon mai, the Gemara wants to know what would be an example of something which was already fully cooked from before Shabbos, that if I were to soak it in hot water, it would not be a problem on Shabbos. The Gemara says, Amar Safra could go and tie Negolta to Rabbi Abba, the chickens that used to cook in Rabbi Abba's house. What was significant about those chickens? So Rashi says that those chickens were thoroughly overcooked, apparently for some medicinal purpose. I'm not exactly sure what or why they needed to overcook chickens for medicinal purposes, but apparently they used to cook, and this was like more than just overcooked. This was like, you know, significantly overcooked to the point that it was basically almost like not you know, not even existent anymore, essentially. So if I wanted to take this, you know, severely overcooked chicken in Rabbi Abba's house and put it back in the hot water on Shabbos, the Gemara says that would be okay. For Amar of Safra, Zimna Chada Ikloyes Lahasam, the Ochlan Mine, the Elo Rabbi Abba, the Ashkion Chamba Bar Klosa Tarfe Itanse. Rav Safra said that one time I went to Rabbi Abba's house and he fed me this you know seriously overcooked chicken, and if not for Rabbi Abba, who fed me this 3-year-old wine, you know, it would have forced me to vomit. I would have been so sick to my stomach from this chicken that I would have thrown up. Rabbi Yochanan Raik Mikutach de Bavloi. Rabbi Yochanan used to spit when he thought about Kutach HaBavli. Kutach is this dip. The Gemara talks about it in a number of places. Kutach is a dip that's made out of stale bread, moldy yogurt, and salt. Again, I don't know exactly why that was considered such a delicacy, but the Gemara talks about this in a few places in terms of Hilchos Pesach. It talks about this in terms of Hilchos Basar B'chalav. This concept of Kutach comes up in a few places in Shas. So Rabbi Yochanan, when he thought about this dip, he used to spit in disgust. They know that, you know, that this dip was so disgusting. Amar Rav Yosef Viliro Kanami Tarnegolto de Rabbi Abba. So if Rabbi Yochanan is spitting at the thought of Kutach, well, we should spit at the thought of Rabbi Abba's chickens that are so overcooked. The Od Amar Rav Gaza Zim Nachada Iklois Lahasam VaAvdis Kutach de Bavloi SheIlumine Kol Brichem Arava. So Rav Gaza said that it's actually not really true. He says not everyone is disgusted by Kutach. He says, and the proof is because one time I went there and they gave me some Kutach, and all the healthy people in Eretz Yisrael were asking me for Kutach. So obviously it wasn't a dip that every single person was disgusted by. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, Kol Shelo Babicham. And the Mishnah contrasted and said that if something was not cooked before Shabbos, then you would not be allowed to cook it on Shabbos. But we said that you can rinse it off. So the Gemara wants to know, Hidiach Mai. What would the halacha be if a person went ahead and actually rinsed off, again, we're talking about like the easily cooked foods, the kalei habishul, which the Mishnah said that you're not allowed to do either. In other words, you can't even rinse off in hot water the easily cooked fish. What if a person did that? What would the halacha be? Amar Rav Yosef, idia chayachatas. If a person went ahead and rinsed off the kalei habishul, he rinsed off these easily cooked fish, that would be an isra d'oraisa. Amar mar berei d'ravina, afa na nami tanina, chutz v'maliach yashan v'kul yasa espanin shahadachas, and zoi gemar malachtan shmamina, and comes the Gemara and supports and corroborates that idea also, because the Mishnah said explicitly that if something was not cooked before Shabbos, normally you can rinse it off in hot water, unless it's one of the kalei habishul, unless it's one of these easily cooked fish or whatever it is, in which case the Mishnah says it's going to be a problem. That's exactly what the Gemara says, that it would be an isur d'oraisa to rinse with hot water something which is considered kalei habishul. Okay. The Gemara now says, Yosef Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba v'Rabbi Asi kamei d'Rabbi Yochanan v'Yosef Rabbi Yochanan v'kamei nam name. So Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba and Rabbi Asi were sitting in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan started to doze off. He was getting tired. Amar le Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba le Rabbi Asi. So now they wanted to kind of wake up Rabbi Yochanan. So they started asking these kind of very out there, kind of crazy questions. Mipnei ma'ofos shebe'bavel shmeinim. Why are the birds in Bavel so fat? So Amar Leh, he said, Klach l'midbar Aza, v'erich shmeinim mehen. He says, go to the desert of Aza, I'll show you birds that are even fatter. Okay, then he asked him, Mimneima moadim shebebavel semichim. Why are the yamim tovim so joyous in Bavel? So he said, Mimnei shehin aniyim, because they're poor. How does that answer the question? Because the assumption is that since they most of their year is spent in great poverty, they really look forward to and anticipate the chagim, as opposed to people who are wealthier, who the chagim is really no different to them than the rest of the year. Then he said, Mimneima talmidei chachamim shebebavel mitzuyan. And why are the talmidei Chachamim in Bavel so well dressed? Why do they dress so nicely? He says, "Lefi she'enon b'nei Torah," because they're not such big talmidei chachamim. Again, how does that answer the question? So Rashi says because he says that since they don't have anything else going for them, they don't have their Torah learning to back them up, so they have to dress nicely. Dressing nicely is like their is their way of showing their significance. Mibneima ovde kochavim mizuhamim. Why are non-Jews, now again, it's kind of a hard word to translate the word mizuhamim. Mizuhamim means something along the lines of disgusting or putrid or something like that. So why are the non-Jews, why do they have this pungent odor? Why are they so foul smelling? So the Gemara says, because they eat these all these ants and insects and things like that. So the Gemara says, Isar behu Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan, after he hears all these answers, as he's dozing off, he wakes up. Amar Lui says, Dardike, young children. Didn't I tell you? The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Say to wisdom, you are my sister." What does that mean? This is a famous drasha the Gemara quotes in a number of places in Shas, where the Gemara says that if the thing you're talking about is clear to you, the same way that it's clear to a person that there's an isser for a brother and a sister to have relations, then you can say it. But if the matter is not that clear to you, if it's not as obvious to you as the isser of achoso, then you cannot say it. In other words, what he was basically saying was that you were all the answers that you just gave to these questions are flawed, and you should never have said them in the first place. That's basically what he was saying. So now he's going to have to provide his own answers to these questions. So amru lei v'lema lan mar, he's a man. So why don't so Rabbi Yochanan, why don't you answer the questions that we posed before? So for example, mipneima ofel shebebavel shmein, and why is it that the birds of Bavel are so fat? He said mipnei shelo galu shene'emar sha'anan moav min. So he says, because they never went into Galus. And so what does that have to do with anything? So the Gemara cites a pasuk from Sefer Yirmiyahu that says that Moav was always living in a state of tranquility. They never had to go into Galus. They were always living in a state of positivity. They never had to go anywhere. And because they were in a constant state of Galus, they got fat and they were overindulging. So the reason why these chickens in Bavel are the birds in Bavel are so fat is because they never had to go anywhere. They were always sitting in Bavel. V'hacham enalan degalu. How do we know over here that the chickens from Eretz Yisrael are going, or the birds from Eretz Yisrael did go to Galus? Desanya, this is actually ironically from tomorrow's Haftorah in the morning, from the Haftorah for Tisha B'Av morning. Rabbi Huda Omer, nun beis shana lo avar ish b'Yehuda. There were for 52 years, no man, no person, no one passed through the area of Yehuda of Eretz Yisrael. Shenema, this is the pasuk from the Haftorah we're going to read tomorrow morning. Al heharim esav v'chi vanehi. Me'ov ha-shamayim ve'ad behima nadadu halachu behima begamatria chamshin v'sartin havu. The pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, it says that we go up onto the mountains and we're crying over the fact that we were exiled from Eretz Yisrael, and the pasuk specifies that even the birds and even the animals were all exiled, and the Gemara says that the gematria of the word behima is 52. So that's how we know that everyone, including the animals, were exiled and kicked out of Eretz Yisrael for 52 years, and that's why the birds of Eretz Yisrael were not so fat, because they were always on the move with everybody else. But the birds of Bavel, they never had to go into Galus, so they were always so those birds got a little bit fatter. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kulon Chazru Chutz Mikul Yasa Yispanin. The Amar Rav Hani Midre de Bavel Mahadre Mayo Lein Etam Vahai Kevan De Lo Sharu Shidre Lo Matzei Salak. And this is a kind of almost like a tangential connection to the Mishnah that we were talking about before about the examples of things that are Kalei Habishul, things that are easily cooked. One of the things that we mentioned in the Mishnah was called Kulyasa Ispanin, which again is some kind of a small fish. So the Gemara says, that all of the animals that were initially exiled from Eretz Yisrael during those 52 years eventually came back because the water was flowing through the spring in Etam. The only animal that didn't make its way back was this Kulias HaYispan, and this the small fish that we talked about in the Mishnah. Why not? Because this fish doesn't have a vertebrae, doesn't have a spine, so it wasn't able to swim upstream against the heavy currents. But all the other animals were able to make it back. So that was Rabbi Yochanan's answer to the first question. Then the second question was, Nema Moadim Shebebavel Semichim. Why are they so happy in Bavel on the Chagim more so than in Eretz Yisrael? B'nei shelo hayu ba'osa klala. Tichsev hishbati kol misosa chaga chadshah v'shabatah v'chol malada. Uchsev chadshechem u'moadichem sana'an avshi hayu alay l'torach. Because the people of Bavel were not subjected to the curse of no longer having the Chagim. What does that mean? So this is a pasuk from Sefer Hosea, where the pasuk says that Hashem says, I'm going to get rid of all of your festivals, all of your Chagim, all of your Shabbosos, all of your happy days, I'm going to get rid of. And then the pasuk that we actually read on this past Shabbos is Haftorah, the Haftorah for Shabbos Chazon from the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu. The pasuk says, "Chad shechem moadechem son anashi hayu alay l'torach." That Bnei Yisrael despised the Rosh Chodeshim, the Rosh Chodesh, and the Chagim, and they were considered like a burden. So what does that mean? My hayu alay l'torach. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, lo dayon li Yisrael shachotin lefanai elo shematrichen osi leida izogzera kasha. It's bad enough that Bnei Yisrael sinned, but they also want to know which punishments I'm going to bring upon them because they sinned. There was no chag where the army, of the Romans didn't come into the city of Tzipori and antagonize us and try to collect taxes from us. The point was is that in Bavel, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the reason why they were so happy is because no one ever bothered them. No one ever came in and invaded, but in Eretz Yisrael, apparently it was a common occurrence that on the Chagim, the army would come in, and government officials would come in and give Bnei Yisrael a hard time. V'amar Rabbi Chanina, ein l'cho kol regel v'regel shelo bala Tiveria agmon v'kimton uval zemora. And again, there was no Chag in Tiveria where you didn't have all these various Roman government officials coming in, and whether it's collecting taxes or just antagonizing the Jews or whatever it was. So again, in Eretz Yisrael, it was considered significant. Less, less joyous on the Chagim, not because they were wealthier and they didn't appreciate it, but Rabbi Yochanan says rather because they were always nervous that the Romans were going to come in and somehow antagonize them. Okay, then the third question was, and why did the Talmidei Chachamim Bavel dress so nicely? So earlier the Gemara said the reason was because they weren't real Talmidei Chachamim and they had to do something to make themselves look presentable and look nice. But now Rabbi Yochanan says, no, Lefi She'enon B'nei Mekoman. Da'amrei Inche B'masa Shemai B'lo Masa Tosvai. The Gemara gives a different answer. Now Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the reason why they dressed so nicely is because they weren't, because this wasn't their homeland. The Gemara says, when you're in your homeland, when you're in Eretz Yisrael, so you can just get by with the prestige of your name. You don't need anything else aside from your good name. But if you're a foreigner, if you don't belong here, if you really belong in Eretz Yisrael, but you're living in Bavel, you have to rely on your clothing, on other external things that make you look more presentable. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan said. That's why they dress more nicely. Okay. Then the Gemara cites a pasuk also from Sefer Yeshayahu. This is the Haftorah for Parsha Shemos. The pasuk says, "Habaim Yashrish Yaakov Yatzitz Ufarach Yisrael." It says that those people who are coming from Yaakov, they're going to be implanted, and it says they're going to start to blossom like the flower of Klal Yisrael. So what does that mean? Tanei Rav Yosef. These refer to the Talmidei Chachamim of Bavel who make these buds and flowers and things like that for the Torah. Again, this line of the Gemara would seem to support Rabbi Yochanan, because remember, according to the other Amoraim, the reason why the Bnei Bavel dress nicely is because they really were not Talmidei Chachamim. This line of the Gemara seems to assume that the Bnei Bavel were in fact Talmidei Chachamim, and the reason why they dress nicely is because they felt out of place in Bavel. Okay, and then finally the last question was, Mimneima Ovde Kochavim Mizuham, and why are the non-Jews, why are they putrid and disgusting? So the Gemara says, Shelo Omdu Al Har Sinai. Rabbi Yochanan says it's not because they eat shkatzim or mustn't because they eat insects, but rather it's because they weren't at Har Sinai during Matan Torah. Shebisha Sheba Nachash Al Chava, Hikilba Zuhama. because when the Nachash had relations with Chava, the Nachash injected this filth into Chava. So Yisrael she'amdu al har Sinai paska zu amasan, ov de kochavim shelo amdu al har Sinai lo paska zu amasan. So Bnei Yisrael, who experienced Matan Torah cleansed them of that filth that the Nachash injected into us, but the non-Jews who were not at har Sinai never had that experience of being cleansed of that filth. So the Gemara says, Amar le Rav Acha b'rei de Rava le Rav Ashi, gei remai, what about converts? Because converts were never at Har Sinai, so how were they rid of that filth? So Amar Lein says, no, Afa gav de inhu lo havu, mazlayu havu, de chsev, es asher yeshno po imanu omed hayom, lifnei Hashem elokeinu ve es asher einenu po. The Gemara says, because even though they physically were not at Har Sinai, but their mazel was there. What does that mean, their mazel was there? So Rashi in Megillah says that mazel refers to a person's ministering angel in Shamayim. Again, there are different interpretations of what exactly that means, but basically what the Gemara is saying is that the Geirim had some sort of connection to Har Sinai in kind of a metaphysical way, so they also experienced the purification of Matan Torah. And the Gemara points out, Upliga de Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, this sentiment, this idea that the Geirim were there and that they were rid of their filth at Har Sinai, and that's why the non-Jews still have their filth, is actually against Rabbi Abba. To Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Atshlosha Doros Lo Paska Zuama Me'avu Seinu, Avraham Holides Yishmael, Yitzchak Holid as Esav, Yaakov Holid Yud Be Shvatim Shelo Haya Bahen Shum Dofi. The Gemara says that basically this notion of filth that was inflicted from the Nachash into Chava, according to Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, this filth was gone after the Shvatim. In other words, basically the filth passed down through the Avos, because each of them had one child who was bad, namely you had Yishmael and Esav. But then when you got to the Shvatim, where the Gemara assumes that all the Shvatim were good and beyond reproach, so the Gemara says that at that point all the filth stopped. So clearly, Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana's idea of the Zuhama, the filth that started from the Nachash, is very different than the other Shita in the Gemara, because the other Shita said, no, that the filth lasted all the way until Har Sinai, and that's why the non-Jews still have it to this day. Whereas according to Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, the filth stopped a long time ago. No one had the filth, after the times of the Shvatim. Okay, so I think we'll stop here.